walk down Haight Street, and I believe he was chanting japa. I was a spiritual seeker then. I took note of him, but I didn't approach him. But I kept in touch with him. Then, maybe a week or two later, I was crossing Union Square in San Francisco, and I saw the Bodhisattva coming out. And I also took note of them. There's a large crowd gathered around them, but somehow I felt I had to get somewhere, and I didn't stop too long. And the next time I saw the Bodhis was in March of 1969. I went to a program in the auditorium of Brandeis University in Boston, and Srila Prabhupada was on the stage with various devotees. And after the program, they asked if anyone was driving to Cambridge or Boston, and it happened that I was driving to Cambridge, so I gave the devotees a lift and found out where the temple was, so I could go the next day, because I was looking for who. And so I went the next day, and I asked Prabhupada a question, heard his answer, became convinced that he was the guru that I was looking for. And then I started to come to the temple every day. And got beads and began to chant. And I would chant quite loudly. I wasn't keeping track, and I wasn't of the time or the number of rounds. I was just chant pretty loudly, and I think one of the most few memorable experiences, one evening I went back to my apartment and I was chanting. It was very soon in the first days, and I got a picture of Krishna. I was looking at the picture and chanting, and it started to glow and get all silver. And I guess that appealed to the sense of a mystic experience that I was looking for at the time. But then later, one of the devotees mentioned that Vishnu Maharaj had told Srila Prabhupada that when he chanted, he saw a different color of lights. And Prabhupada replied, "Well, just keep chanting and they'll go away." So then I thought, well, maybe that picture turning silver and almost the form of almost disappearing wasn't really the goal. But then I had another experience that was really nice. That was maybe, and it was 6 weeks later. There was a very beautiful picture of Murli Manohar, the Brijbasi prince, Burjan Prabhu's favorite. And I was looking, and I heard by then that you begin your meditation on the lotus feet, on the toes. So I was just sitting and chanting and looking at, like, the tip of the toe, of one of the toes of Krishna's lotus feet. And it was just became so fascinating. It seemed like the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. And as I was like looking at that very tip, little pinkish tip of the Krishna's toe, and just chanting, going deeper and deeper and deeper. Thinking, I don't know if I'm going to get beyond the tip of your toe, but that's okay, because good. Let's keep going deeper and deeper. Then, after about 2.5 months, the devotees decided they needed another pujari. So, in those days, you could do deity worship after first initiation. But they got a lot of work for 2.5 months, and they figured I could get up in time to do the. In those days, I think Mother Lakshmi was at 6 in the morning. They recommended me. And, so I needed some japa mala. So one of the senior, they were all senior, one of the senior devotees said, and in those days we didn't have a tulsi mala from India, but we would go to a bee shop, usually like a bee shop that sold beads, and we'd buy the beads and then we'd string them. So one of the senior devotees said, you know, if you chant one mantra on each bead as you string it, by the time you finish stringing the whole mala, you'll be in ecstasy. So I thought, okay, that sounds good. So I did it, and it ended up as true. It was true. Then, so I sent my letter to Srila Prabhupada, and this is a little different, but it's related. So one day we were on Harinam, Sankirtan in Harvard Square, and I suddenly felt this, stirring of emotion, but I just had a clear perception that I'm not the body. I'm not the body, but at the same time I felt some sort of ecstasy and started to cry. And then, like 2 or 3 days later, my initiation letter came. I spoke to some devotees and they said that it's likely that when I had that experience, I know Sankirtan and Prabhupada was chanting on my beads. So then everything went on. I would look forward to chanting, and I would chant sort of loudly. When I got to India, after serving in Boston for about 1.5 years, Srila Prabhupada asked, like, one disciple from each temple go to India. And in India, we got really busy. I mean, really busy. Srila Prabhupada had such a big mission, and he really kept us busy. And then, at a certain stage, Srila Prabhupada left India after, I guess it was 6, oh, whatever. And so I was in Calcutta. And I felt I had to chant 12 rounds before I did anything else. I couldn't function if I didn't chant 12 rounds. And Tamalakrishna Goswami was the GBC. And I was like good at meeting people and convincing them to give donations. And he wanted me to make appointments and go out, which I wanted to do. But he wanted me to start earlier. And but I felt like I really had to chant like 12 rounds before I did anything else. So one day he approached me and he said, he was angry. And he said, "You know, you just make a show that you like chanting. Actually, you're just trying to avoid work." So I don't even want to assess the validity of what he said, but the fact was I could not function. I just couldn't function well until I did at least 12 rounds. And then later, I met Mahatma Prabhu in Mauritius, and he quoted Srila Prabhupada. That Prabhupada said, "If you don't finish all your rounds by 10 in the morning, you'll be in an anxiety for the rest of the day." So, but anyway, I kept up like that. Then, I guess it was after the at the Gaur Purnima festival in 1972. I went into Srila Prabhupada's hut, which is still there. And Srila Prabhupada said, during the British rule, there were three provinces, Bombay, Calcutta, and Madras. "For which do you want?" I said, "Srila Prabhupada, I'll just do whatever you want me to do. Just tell me what you want me to do and I'll do it." So he said, "No, I want you to decide." And that precipitated a crisis, because up until then, I'd always done what my authorities told me to do. I never took such an important decision on my own. And I realized that Srila Prabhupada was, I realized that to make the proper decision, I would have to surrender to Krishna more, so that Krishna would give me the answer. And that by asking me to make the decision, he was ultimately, forcing me to surrender more. So from Mayapur, we went to Calcutta, and every morning I would just stand in front of the deities, Radha Govinda, and I'd pray for the answer. And I would, as it is, I would like to chant in front of them. This was like focused on getting an answer. But I couldn't get an answer. So then I sort of devised a plan to get Srila Prabhupada to reveal what he wanted me to do. So I went into his room and I said, "Srila Prabhupada, I was thinking about the question you asked me, and I was thinking maybe I should stay in Calcutta." And when I gave the reasons, he said, "Yes, you can stay in Calcutta." And I said, "But then again, I was thinking maybe I should go to Madras." And then I gave the reasons for going to Madras. And in the exact same tone of voice, he said, "Yes, you can go to Madras." And then I realized that my trick wasn't working, but I was already committed to it, so I went through it. I said, "But then again, I was thinking of going to Bombay." And I gave the reasons for going to Bombay. I said, "Yes, you can go to Bombay." Exact same tone of voice. Everything the same. But actually I felt very blissful that, you know, my spiritual master was beyond being tricked by my mischievous neophyte tactic.
So I went back to the sand,
standing in front of Radha Govinda, and then one day I just got the answer to go to Bombay. I wrote Prabhupada, said yes, come to Bombay. Then in Bombay, it became very intense, struggling to get the land from Mr. Nair, to get permission to build a temple, and then to actually build the temple. And I clung to my japa, but I struggled a lot. There's just a lot to do, and sometimes we had to do it early in the morning. But I knew that Prabhupada wanted us to do what we were doing, so we did it. And then, once Srimad-Krishna Goswami complained to Srila Prabhupada that he was in so much anxiety about this whole struggle to get the land that he couldn't chant his rounds properly. And Srila Prabhupada replied, "I know how you feel. I feel the same way." So that was sort of encouraging in a way. Anyway, things went on, you know, for many years. But I think now I'll skip to a more recent period when I perceived that I needed to do more in relation to my job. What had happened was that I became sick in India and traveling, and ultimately, well, I developed heart disease, and I couldn't. I ended up in Santa Barbara. I found out I had it in Santa Barbara, and I saw the doctor. He said, "I can't travel. I have to change my lifestyle." And many, many changes took place. So that was a very different situation for me, not living in a temple. You know, after more than 30 years of living only in temples, basically, I was not living in a temple. And I still took, you know, I was still chanting my rounds, I had deities. And then, you know, things came to the point where I had to have surgery. And that cardiac bypass surgery, and that really changed things. I mean, I couldn't chant for several days. I don't even know how many. And even when I could chant, it would be like a round or two or three or four. So I was gradually falling behind. And at one stage, it was 63 days of rounds behind. But I kept track all that time, and I resolved to make them up. And gradually I did. It took a long time, but eventually I did. But I, somehow in that period, I sort of, I don't know. My job wasn't as focused or concentrated as it had been when I was living in temples and when I was in reasonably good health. So then a number of things started to happen to call my attention to my job. One is I happened to read an article by Mahatma Prabhu on the internet called "Put an End to Courtesy Japa." And then I looked at the title, and we get so many emails, I don't always read them all right away. But anyway, somehow I got intrigued about it, and I read it. I thought, oh, this is very interesting, you know, to really be attentive when we chant. At the same time, His Holiness Sachinanda Swami had given me a copy of his book of the Nectarian Ocean of the Holy Name. And I had the book and I looked at it, but I hadn't really studied it seriously. And I don't know, I just started hearing so many devotees mention that book. So I took it, this is another sign, and then I began to read the book seriously. And then His Holiness Narottam Swami came to spend 2 months with me, or whatever. I felt, well, I could see he was very serious in his job, entered very serious about his relationship with the Holy Name. So I thought, well, this is a good opportunity, because I knew that by serving great souls, you develop the qualities of the great soul you serve. And Prabhupada says that the primary characteristic of a great soul is taste for hearing and chanting. So I thought, well, this is good. I can chant with him, and I can also serve him, and by serving him, I might get some mercy in relation to my own japa. And that proved to be true. And then, I don't know if it was the same visit of his or another, because for a while he spent a pretty good amount of time with me. And so the organizers of Bhagavat Life, it began as the Spiritual Care Initiative of the North American Strategic Planning Team and Committee. And so they were thinking what to do, and so I guess Shukla Prabhu sent out an email like, you know, who can spare time for this, and if you'd like to team up with a particular devotee, they can say who you'd like to team up with. So I wrote, yes, I can spare some time on this, and I'd like to team up with the Holiness. But I can't travel much because of my health, and it's a bit better now. So it was planned that we would have a retreat near Santa Barbara, California. It was arranged for Ojai. And then Maharaj, he himself had to undergo a procedure, medical procedure, and there were complications, and he had to cancel his trip. So, but Yogi Purush Prabhu was determined that we should, have it anyway. So it seems like it's going to really be different without Maharaj, but we did, and that one was basically all Prabhupada disciples, God brothers and God sisters. At that time they had the idea that there would be different retreats for different groups, and that was sort of like for spiritual leaders. And Arvinder Sir Prabhu came, and Yamuna Devi came, Bharari Prabhu came to lead the kirtans in the evening, and I think it was one of the most profound experiences I ever had in my whole life in Krishna consciousness. It was just dramatic. I mean, I learned so much. There was a lot of sharing. Not only were they all God brothers and God sisters, but it was a pretty small group, and we really got to be very close to each other by the end of it. And a lot of us were close to each other anyway, after serving together for so many years. But the culmination was the 64 round day. I mean, that was amazing. It was just amazing, and I felt such a bond with all the other participants, because we were remembering all the things we learned you know, had discussed over the days leading up to it. And I got a lot of strength from seeing the other devotees. And just profound realization, especially getting up like 56 rounds, 58 rounds, 60 rounds, really dramatic, really dramatic. And that really was one of those experiences where I thought, I'm never going to be the same after this. And it lasted. I mean, you can't always keep up that same focus and intention, and you don't maybe have that luxury of not having anything else to do in the support of the association, but definitely. But of course, even the retreat itself was a stage of progression in a course of focusing more on japa. And of course, by serving the holy name, one gets the mercy of the holy name. And so then when Purushottama would ask me to help with other workshops and retreats, I would agree. And like Bhojan Prabhu often says, the best way to learn something is to teach it. So it's been very beneficial. I mean, there's more, but maybe I'll just tell one more because I think I do have about 2 minutes. Sometimes the experiences with japa aren't always pleasant in a superficial sense, because you actually confront deep facts about your own self, your position. At the retreat, Ravindra Surya told about his own experience. He had always heard, chant Hare Krishna and be happy, and he went through a period where it was really when he was first trying to chant with attention. He got it, like, it's not just he chants 16 rounds, but he really tried to hear every mantra, every word, every syllable. And as a result of that, he had some realizations about himself. Basically that he had turned away from Krishna, and that it was, but that Krishna was completely faultless. He had turned away from him, and the fault was entirely his own. So, like he described about, like this, this is like his dirty little secret. He thought it was like chanting happy. He thought everyone was just chanting being happy. He had this dirty little secret. Then later, reading some of the prayers of the previous acharyas, started to realize this. It is part of the process. And I had experiences like that. One was on the beach in Kathmandu. I was sitting and chanting, and I was feeling like tremendous weight of suffering for, well, I guess it began with individuals, but anyway, just like feeling the suffering so heavy. But it went beyond that to just like everyone on the beach. There weren't many, it's a pretty secluded beach, but maybe a few people. To just not just see that they were suffering, but I was feeling their suffering. And then beyond that, I went to all the creatures on the beach. And, they were like pelicans, they fly, and they're looking for food in the ocean, and they just kind of spotting straight down. And, superficially, it's all very nice and picturesque and everything, but I was thinking,
pelicans in anxiety to get food. It's always an anxiety to get food. And same thing, there were, we had dolphins there also, so it's just oh, nice, the dolphins are, they're usually twos or fours, or the same thing, you know. They're in anxiety, just looking for food. And it went on and on, the sandpipers, and then a little ladybug landed on my left hand. I looked at the ladybug, and I just feel the suffering and anxiety of the ladybugs. It was like overwhelming. And I felt, you know, this is too much. I can't bear this at all. You know, when I have a nervous breakdown or something, this goes on. And but all the while chanting, this was all about chanting. And then I got the answer by the mercy of the Holy Name that Krishna is the best, is their best friend. He's in their heart. He knows how they're suffering. Prabhupada said early on that, yeah, that only Krishna knows how nice you are, and only Krishna knows the volume of your suffering. So I was thinking, and then I realized the problem is I'm trying to take Krishna's place. You know, he loves these living entities so much. I mean, things we've heard that I was actually giving it. He loves these living entities so much. He's following them around wherever they go, body after body, even in all these species of insects and birds and aquatics. And not only that, he can really do something for them. I might want to do something for someone, but then it's questionable how much I can really do to help them. But Krishna, he knows them better than I do, he loves them more than I do, and he can do more for them than I can. And then it came back to what Prabhupada always said, that it's heartfelt, that the best friend is not he who poses to be the best friend, but he who takes it to Krishna, who is in fact your best friend. So it's just, I sort of realized my basic problem was that I wanted to take Krishna's place. Anyway, there's so much to say, and more will be said over the days to come. But it's a very enlivening, purifying experience. It's a great adventure. Japa really means developing a relationship with Krishna, and Krishna is simply wonderful, and he deals with us in wonderful ways. He gives us what we need when we need it, and he does it all through various methods, but in particular through the Holy Name. And I really feel blessed to be in the association of devotees who are serious about chanting. It makes a tremendous difference to make the journey with others. And I look forward to more adventures along the way with all of you. Hare Krishna.